Hi, I'm Pastor Jeremy, and welcome to the preaching ministry of Nest Baptist, where we seek to equip people to love God and love others. So whether you are a longtime follower of Jesus, or you're exploring what faith in Him might look like, we're glad you're here. It is our prayer that through our sermons, you might better understand who God is, what He has done for you, and what that means for your life. May all of this lead to the worship of God and be for His glory.
Good morning. Today I'll be reading from Matthew 25, verses 14 through 30. So again, that's Matthew 25, verses 14 through 30. I'll be reading from the English Standard Version, and it's the parable of the talents. "For it will be like a man going on a journey, who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who had received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug it into the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, 'Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more.' His master said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little, I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master.' And he also who had the 2 talents came forward, saying, 'Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here I have made 2 talents more.' His master said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little, I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master.' He also who had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, 'Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours.' But his master answered him, 'You wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.' May the Lord bless the reading of his word."
Thank you, Noah. While we are waiting, well, I don't want to remind everyone about this, but remember how hard it was to wait for spring to come this year? It was hard. I mean, we obviously had the coldest, you know, most snowy winter on record, and it seemed like summer was only a figment of our imagination. Did it really exist? Would it really ever come again? Would I ever be able to walk outside in a t-shirt again? It didn't almost seem like it was real. We knew it was coming, but it was so hard to wait. It just seemed to last forever. It was like winter in Narnia. And then on the flip side, it feels like, what? Summer is already coming to a close, and it's going to be fall very soon. I don't want to even mention it, but, you know, it's starting to get there already. We just want this to last for a few more months, but it just feels so short. It's a total flip-flop. Waiting for winter seems to just fly right by, while waiting for summer seems to drag on forever. Waiting is tough. You know, you may have waited for maybe a reno to get done in your home, or maybe for your home to get built, or you've waited for a phone call from a doctor with results of your recent tests, or maybe you've waited for exam results to come in, or maybe a call from a potential employer, or maybe you've waited for a loved one to pass away, or you've waited for grief to end. You know, waiting is an essential part of the human experience. And it's also, as Jesus says, it's a big part of the life of a follower and a believer in Jesus Christ. You know, the last part of Matthew chapter 24 and chapter 25, it deals with the subject of how do we wait for his return. So I think it was appropriate that today our responsive reading was this. Many of the songs that we sang referred to this as well. And this is a major theme of a number of Jesus' parables and the teachings that he gave. Particularly, as I said, the last part of 24 and chapter 25 here in Matthew. Now, I'm sure you've thought of that. How do we wait for his return? Does it seem to you as though it is long delayed? When do you think Jesus is coming? Do you mind waiting? Are you getting anxious for it? Are you dreading it? Are you just sitting back and waiting for it to come? Maybe you're even a little skeptical that it's ever going to happen. You know, I think what's interesting is that Jesus actually deals with all of these things in his parables, fortunately for us. You know, the first half of Matthew chapter 24, it's all about the return of Jesus. What is it going to be like? What are the signs going to be? And then there's 1.5 chapters on how we should wait. So Jesus teaches us about it, and then he gives us a whole 1.5 chapters of how we are to wait for it to come about. Each parable in chapter 24 and 25, they almost like they pick up on this and they advance the idea of the former parable. They bring this teaching forward almost piece by piece and in section by section. So if we're looking at the parable of the talents today, we need to just get a quick synopsis on the previous ones that are building on one another. Each parable is kind of like another nuance of this idea of waiting for Jesus. So how do we wait? How do we wait? Well, D.A. Carson, he suggests the following synopsis of these parables. So there's a number of them here that come just before. The first one, we wait as those who do not wish to be surprised by their master's return. And this comes from chapter 24, verse 36. And Jesus says here that no one is going to know the day or the hour. And what you will see there is that no one is expecting it. This is what Jesus says. Nothing is crazy is kind of going to be going on in the world. People are going to be going on its life as normal when Jesus returns. And that's not often how we think of it, is it? But Jesus says it will be like it was in the days of Noah. And this is exactly what happened in the days of Noah. People are going on life without any distraction. They were eating, they were getting married, they were going to work. And then Noah gets into an ark. And they're like, what are you doing, Noah? Everything's fine. We're all going about life as normal. It will be like that again, Jesus says. That's exactly what it'll be like. People will be unaware, and then it will be too late. Two people working, one taken, and the other left behind. I wish we'd all been ready. Does anybody know that song? That's an old one. There's a few. Oh, well, Terrence is here today, so of course. I wish we'd all... I was going to bring the guitar up. Life was filled with guns. Two men walking up a hill. One disappears and one's left standing still. Yes, thank you. That didn't sound like Johnny Cash at all. But it's a good song, nonetheless. And it tells exactly of what this parable is talking about. It'll be like that. Two people working, one's left and one's still there. And we don't know how to even wrap our minds around it, but this is the teaching that Jesus gives in this parable. And so we are to wait as those who do not wish to be surprised by their master's return. I don't know. And then verse 43, Jesus says another example. He says, if you knew the time when a thief was going to break into your house, you would stay awake and you would be ready for them. You wouldn't be caught off guard. I don't know if you've ever had your house broken into. I actually did the summer that Tanya and I got married. I was still living with my folks before we got married. My dad was a dairy worker, so we always had a lot of ice cream treats in our deep freeze. It was kind of a good way to grow up. I went downstairs one night, though. They were gone for the weekend. It was just me at home, and my folks were away, and the basement floor by the deep freeze was just covered and littered with ice cream wrappers all over the floor. I couldn't believe it. I was in shock. I'm like, people were brazen enough to break into our house, and they were as unaffected by it that they could actually have snacks while they were doing it. Like, this blew my mind. I don't know. Actually, I don't even remember what they stole. Maybe that was all they were after. I'm not sure because I don't remember they actually took anything other than the ice cream. But that was surprising to me. And then I actually went outside and I noticed that there was a chair underneath my bedroom window. So they had been watching me sleep and they had been waiting for me to be gone so that they knew when to break in. So that was kind of disconcerting as well. If I would have known, though, they would have been coming. And this is what Jesus says. If you knew the day or the time when they were becoming, it's like, watch out. Like, you would be ready, you'd be prepared, it wouldn't happen. I don't know what I would do exactly. But anyway, says it would be very different if you knew exactly when that time would be, rather than if you would be surprised by your master's return. So that's the first section of Jesus. And then he says, we wait as stewards who must give an account. And that's the end of chapter 24. And it gives that parable of a faithful steward and not one who is unfaithful, because his master is not returning for a long time. It's a long time. So what are you doing in that time? Some will be faithful, some will give up being faithful. He talks about that. Third, we also wait as those who know, or as those who know their master's return may be long delayed. And that's the parable of the 10 bridesmaids in chapter 25, verse 1 to 13, the parable just before this one. The wise ones, the wise bridesmaid, they have extra oil for the long wait. But the foolish ones do not. They run out of oil too soon. And so they have to run out and they have to get more because they've run out and they miss the bridegroom's return and they're left out of the banquet. We do not want to wait as those, or we want to wait as those who know and understand that our master's return may be long delayed. And the point of all of this, Carson says, is that we are to, and this is kind of the whole big idea and theme of this parable, is we wait for the Lord as servants who are commissioned to improve their master's assets. So that's the big idea, is that we are to wait for the Lord as servants who are commissioned to improve their master's assets. That is the thrust of these sections of parables that Jesus gives here. So there's a few ideas, though, a few details we need to be aware of in order to make sense of this parable. First of all, number one is, what is a talent? So obviously, a talent is not referring to something that you're good at. A talent was a unit of measurement for money. So that could either be with silver or with gold. It was literally a bag of money. One talent was a bag of money. And if it was silver, it would have one value. If it was gold, it would have another value. So in first century Palestine, a denarius was one day's wage. One day work, one denarius. And a talent was 6,000 denarius. So that would be about 20 years of wages. Basically, it's about $1 million. If you make about like $50,000 a year, that'd be like $1 million in each bag, in each talent. Each bag was worth that much. Now, that's a lot of money. I have a relative that is an investing specialist at a bank, and she only handles portfolios of over $1 million. And one day last year, a guy came in that wanted to invest with her, and he had a briefcase with $1 million of cash in it. I kid you not. Now, if that doesn't look suspicious, I don't know what does. And obviously, they weren't about to invest this guy's cash or do business with this person, because where has this come from? Because $1 million is a lot of money, obviously. So this is a parable of a master dispersing $8 million to his slaves, each according to their ability. So this is some of the money that we're talking about here. Now, that brings us to the second point. That's a talent. But the other idea is that these are slaves and these are not servants. And that's pertinent to the parable as well. Or else the story doesn't actually really make sense. The word is bondservant. And it was actually very common in Roman cultures and cities. Extremely common. In fact, it is said that as much as 1/3 of the Roman population in occupied Roman territories were slaves. 1/3 of the population. And as many as 1/3 or more had previously been slaves. So that was a great deal of your population, and it was a lot of different kinds of people. And we'll get into that. But let's start the parable, and then I'll explain this a little bit more. So let's read, just once again, I want to read verse 14 and 15 here that says, "For it will be like a man going on a journey, who called his servants, his slaves, and he entrusted them to his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability, and then he went away." So the master makes an assessment of each of his slaves ability to manage his assets. Takes a look at them and he figures this guy can handle this much. This guy should be able to do okay with this, and this one this. And he distributes some of his assets according to that ability. One gets five, one gets two, and one only gets one. Now, slavery was obviously more complex then, as I mentioned. And in modern times, it has been one people group in slavery to another people group. That's usually how we think of slavery. But not in Roman times. You see, these slaves were from all different cultures. They were from all different races, all different backgrounds and demographics. It was not ethnocentric like we are used to. One reason for slavery was military battles and capturing the enemy, but that was really the smaller portion. Most common reason for slavery was simply because there were no bankruptcy laws in those days like we have today. There was nothing that would protect you. Banks did not bail you out like we have today. So if you found yourself in debt that you couldn't repay, you had to sell yourself to the one that you owed the money to, possibly your whole family as well, would be living as slaves, bond servants to this master. So most slavery was about economic hard times. Many of these people were brilliant people. Many of them were good business people, but for some reason, and there were many reasons in ancient cultures, they lost it all. You probably know many people who have had to declare bankruptcy, as I have. Well, no, I haven't declared bankruptcy, I don't mean. As I have known people who has, that didn't come out quite right. Not that there's any shame in that, of course. Many people have. But if we had lived then, they would have become a slave. So probably people that you know, maybe yourself even, maybe your whole family would have had to become a slave. You were indebted to or bonded to the person that you owed this money to. So it was all kinds of people. Some of them, and some of these slaves may have been actually higher educated even than their masters were. It was all kinds of people. And so these guys were probably former business owners themselves, people who had the ability to be able to do something with this money. It wasn't just randomly given to people. But they had the experience, and each had a unique ability. And so the master goes away on a journey, and to the one whom he gives five bags, he traded with those, and he gets five bags more. And this isn't through the stock market that he did this. He probably started some businesses, many businesses, probably not one business because there were no mega businesses in those days. You couldn't have just opened up an IKEA store and had a $5 million investment there in short order. You probably had to open up 20 or 30 stores or businesses in order to make this kind of a profit. What would you do if you had been given $5 million and told you had to take care of it while this person was gone? What would you do with it? And remember, you can't invest it. There's no stock markets, but you could put it into a bank. That is an option. Would you do that? Or would you do something else? That would be a good life group question. If our life groups were meeting right now, what would you do with it? This morning, I actually had the idea that I would start kind of a skip the dishes type business, but for Kijiji or Facebook marketplace purchases. Would that be a great idea? I mean, who wants to deal with some of those people you buy stuff with? Like me, many times. Or drive all the way to Transcona. I ain't got time for that. Or you don't have a truck to pick it up. You know, all these scenarios. You see what I'm saying? Then I could franchise that across the country because that's how you make your money, not just being in one locale. And I wouldn't start it like most people in Canada start their businesses. You know, businesses start here. You'd have an old pickup truck, and then you think, well, if I get enough, I'll buy a second. And then, no, that like in the United States, you would just go full on. And I would have a fleet of like, you know, those like Amazon Prime trucks. And you would know when it's me coming through your town. That's Johnny Cash says that, I think. And it would be, I think, a very successful business. So that's an idea. But if you do that, you know, if you do that, make sure you tithe on those profits because I think that's a good business. But what would you do with that kind of money? Because that's a lot of money and you're going to have to invest it somehow. What would you do with it? Or would you just put it in a bank safely and just hope that it does okay? Most likely, this slave would have had to start 10 or 20 businesses, as I said, in order to make that kind of return. It was a lot. He was obviously extremely talented in the business world, and this was hard work that this guy did. And it's the same guy, the same thing with the guy that had the two bags, the $2 million. He makes two more. The guy who has one bag, we are told, he digs a hole, and he takes the bag and he puts it into the hole and hides it. And then in verse 19, it says that after a long time, and this wording means a very long time. And it picks up on that previous parable of the 10 bridesmaids. And in verse 20 and 21, the master says this, after a long time, and he returns. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of my master, of your master. Now notice, first of all, that the guy with the 5 bags comes forward first. He's not ashamed. He kind of has this confidence, I think, that he has done well, and that's not a bad thing. But what's really interesting is what the master says. He says to him, those who have been faithful with a few things here will have a lot more responsibility there. Faithful with a few things here, a lot more responsibility there. Now, a few things. This is the word that Jesus used here. We're talking about $10 million. He refers to $10 million as a few things. And that's if we're talking about silver. If we're talking about gold, it would be even exponentially more than that. Consider the unimaginable wealth of this master if he refers to $10 million as a mere little. He says, you've been faithful with this, now you get a real job. I mean, just imagine what Jesus is referring to when he makes that statement. The most unimaginable wealth here is nothing compared to what we will have there for the faithful, because God owns it all. So I think that's worth considering in this parable. The second shocking thing, because I think that's one shocking thing, the second is he says, come and share in your master's happiness, or enter into the joy of your master. He invites him in to share what he has. And this isn't normal. You know, this would not be something that a master would offer to a slave. And then the man with 2 bags of $1 million who made 2 more comes forward, and the master offers him that same incredible bonus. And then the man who had given 1, he comes in 24 and 25. And it says, he also who had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and I hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours. Now, if this were simply a servant, you know, maybe we'd have sympathy for him. He's just an employee. But if this is a slave, he is supposed to do what he is told. This is his task. And his job was to improve his master's assets. And the master has a right, as masters did then, to put them to death. They really had that authority over the lives of their slaves. They were bonded to their master. But he doesn't obey, and he doesn't increase the master's assets. And so this happens in verse 26. The master answered him, you wicked and slothful servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have scattered no seed? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers at my coming so that I should receive what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness, and in that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. If what he had said about his master was true, he could have at least gained a small amount of interest on the money. He could have taken it to a bank. That was an option. But he didn't. He buried it. He was disobedient as a slave, and he really didn't know his master. He maybe thought he did. He was fairly confident that he knew, but he didn't know him. On the flip side, the master knew his slaves very well, and he was spot on all 3 accounts of how much to entrust each one with. He knows them intimately well, but the slave does not really know his master. So once again, the point of this is that we are to wait for the Lord as people who exist to improve his assets. This is our task while we wait. And so I think we can make a few points of application from this parable. Number one, the amount that we are entrusted with, it varies a lot. Some of us have had trust funds at our disposal. Some have come from nothing. We have all had a wide variety of experiences in life. We all have different levels of education. We are all born in a particular place in world history. What you have been given is very different from someone who grew up under the Khmer Rouge or in the streets of Central America. And many people in various times and places have been born in a time when they were martyred, when they were persecuted, when they were living under tyranny. Would you consider yourself as having been given more or less than those? Some are entrusted with much, others less. We know of missionaries that have grinded away for years to see their first convert come to Christ, and then all of a sudden, many follow. You know, they felt like they were given a very little amount, but they worked hard. Each one is given according to their ability. We are called to be faithful with what we have been given in order to increase God's assets. What have you been given, and how is it being used? This is one of the lessons that Jesus, I believe, calls for us to draw from this parable. The second is, on the last day, there can be something that you're not ashamed to bring to the Lord. There could be a certain joy can be there, like the man with the five talents. And we often think of this only as the negative and all the wrong, like when we meet the Lord, all the wrongs that we have committed will be there on that last day, and we're dreadful of it, we're fearful. It doesn't need to be that way. We can come before the Lord with the confidence of faithfulness with what we have been given. Here's what I have done with what you have entrusted me with. I did it to improve your assets. Not in a proud way, but with what I would call with a humble confidence. I think this man brought this before his master. The third is that the wicked servant thought his job was too hard, so he didn't try. You know, what did he do with what he was given? He buried it. And why did he just bury it? Because he had a misconception of his master. He didn't heed the warnings. He should have known what was at stake. He thought the job was going to be too hard, so he didn't even try. Have you ever been discouraged because it's hard to show compassion? Or it's hard sometimes to serve other people? It's hard to truly give of yourself. You see, this slave had misconceptions about his master, and it resulted in laziness and bad stewardship. An incorrect view of God does the same thing for us. Fourth, our waiting for Jesus is never passive. See, we are called to do stuff, to work, to improve God's assets. No true disciple waits passively is a theme that cannot be ignored from all of these parables in Jesus' teaching. The parable doesn't tell us every way to do this, but it does tell us that it is a reality. If we're not active, we're being disobedient. See, the rest of Matthew does a really good job of laying out all the ways of doing this in the rest of Jesus' teaching and through his example. We know what we are being called to do. We know what we've been entrusted with: evangelizing, sharing the gospel, serving others, showing compassion, planting churches, caring for people for the sake of the gospel, so that that day when our master returns, he will not cast us out to the outer darkness, but will instead say, "Well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." Those are the words we long to hear. And it's all about how we wait. What are the things that we are doing while we wait? A faithful disciple of Jesus waits for the Lord as a servant who is commissioned to improve their master's assets. And so we wait as those who do not wish to be surprised by our master's return. We wait as stewards who must give an account. And we wait as those who know their master's return may yet be long delayed. And we do so by remembering that the amount that we are entrusted with, it varies from